Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the OIG Roundtable. Excited to talk to you about a couple of great topics. I decided that Pitbull needed to make a special appearance. Apparently I'm the closer. I've got Wade McFall, retired assistant special agent in charge from the OIG and a director on our investigative team. And of course, Matt Kachansky, senior director of payment integrity, retired SAC special agent in charge at the OIG and the retired Northeast UPIC director. And I'll be the closing act for my two warm-ups for this week's podcast. Good. Pitbull's back. Miami strong.
Mr. Worldwide.
What's that, Wade?
Mr. Worldwide, right?
Is that what he goes by? I don't even
Yeah.
know. I don't know. I mean, clearly you're more in with the kids, I guess. I don't know. So cool press release last week. There were two really good press releases that were out in the pharmacy space. But the one I think we're going to talk about is the one that's the near and dear one, which is a Queens Pharmacy, so Eastern District of New York, OIG FBI case involving pharmacy that was doing a whole bunch of fraud, $24 million in fraud between 2015 and 2022, kickbacks, sham rental agreements, using staff from the doctor's offices. To do nothing more than to funnel basically kickbacks to providers for the referral of patients for what are being considered medically unnecessary prescriptions. Kind of the run of the mill, whether the patients needed the medication or not, it's been determined in the press release. They said it was for medically unnecessary prescriptions. They don't outline what those prescriptions are. I would say, from a patient harm perspective, I really hope that it was some innocuous prescription. I don't know if there's something that's an innocuous prescription, but I'm hoping that it's, is it a prescription version of a vitamin or something, which was the other press release that we were talking about. But wait, the thing that kind of comes to mind when we talk about these is a lot of times when you have these kickback cases, we've talked about this kind of ad nauseum, that in the SIU space, identifying kickback cases is a challenge because those things happen behind closed doors. And particularly in this case, they were setting up sham rental agreements. I mean, like old school fraud, setting up a rental agreement where the doctor appeared to being paid rent for something. And obviously, they had to do it through third-party businesses, because why would a pharmacy be renting space from a doctor's office? It appears the owners of the pharmacy had some other businesses that allowed them to launder that money and to do it. One thing that we did notice was there appears to be a very strong cultural background to this. It was in an area of Queens that has a very heavy Korean population. The owners of the pharmacy were Korean. So I suspect the doctors were probably Korean as well, probably some other connections to adult social daycare. It's no surprise we're seeing a lot of these cases come out now, where we're hearing about all these kickbacks going on in the adult social daycare industry going on in the Queens area. And so this is probably in some similar vein to that. But Wade, the thing that always comes that stands out is this is one of those cases where talking to the patients of the doctors, because when you run the data, what you're going to see is you're going to see concentrations. You're going to see concentrations of patients from the same docs going to the same pharmacy. And those numbers may just be, very large concentrations relative to everything else. And so this is one of those where speaking to members may actually be of good value. They may not know of anything fraudulent, but certainly speaking to the members and asking questions, for example, about the prescription that they got, and do you have this medical condition, and what did your doctor tell you, and what have you, and then who are you dealing with in the office? But the key point on this is you may be dealing with a more elderly population of people where English is not their first language. And so, do you have the tools of the trade that are needed, to do this? It's looking at the data, it's looking at the patients, the members. Are they all getting the same prescriptions, right? So, having kind of these things within your toolbox from the SIU perspective are going to help you uncover maybe not the kickback scheme, but obviously something that doesn't seem right.
Right. And there are tools that most likely aren't available to an SIU. So as you said, a lot of times it's going to come down to what you have. And that's a lot of times that might just be data, which can be a little bit limiting in these types of cases, because you basically request the data for a single provider. And as you pointed out, this is likely like a network of different businesses including pharmacists, adult daycares, clinics, and the like. So that those connections wouldn't be obvious just by looking at the data. Some of that could be, discovered through interviews. You know, if you just ask, like, you know, in this case, the press release is on the pharmacy, not a clinic or the other side. But if you ask, like, you know, who the referring doctor is, you know, you can get a lot of that same information. But if you do have an old tool that we used to use a lot, was i2 Analyst Notebook, and I think there's a lot more of them today that probably are readily available. But it was very interesting because you would load several different data sets into this tool, and like magic, it would kick out a graphic that shows the connections. You know, it'll show like the pharmacy and every member who was at that pharmacy that is in common with a certain clinic or several clinics. Then there's also the adult daycare, and there's just a network of these lines linking them all together, link analysis. So then that helps you say, okay, now we need to look at this clinic. If you're originally looking at the pharmacy, now we need to look at this clinic, this adult daycare, whatever, it might be a DME company, who knows. But if you don't have those tools available, like I say, there's probably some that are like free tools. Now, I don't know if you'd have to look as far as loading your data into them, but you can get a lot of that information a couple different ways, mainly through interviewing the members. And again, like you said, this one, there might be a language barrier, but I know some of the SIUs that we've worked with, it's very simple. They have a number you call, you get a third party on the line who you ask the question in English to the translator, they translate it, they get the answer back. It's not the best way to do an interview, but it's pretty effective. But again, if those tools aren't available, a lot of times it boils down to you have to have some interviewing skills and know what to ask and how to follow up those questions. And you can come to the same kind of conclusions. And if it is a case where you see that it's this big network and you don't have those other tools, maybe that's the time where you talk to the Medicaid Fraud Control Unit or, you know, a law enforcement entity that might have more tools and more flexibility and, you know, what they call boots on the ground out there that are able to stop and visit the place. So.
Yeah, it's a good point. Using something like Analyst Notebook or some other version of it where you're creating a link between the different pieces of the puzzle in a visual depiction is an important piece. I mean, the other piece is from an SIU perspective, you've got to have translation services that you have, you know, in case of emergency break glass. Most of those translation services that are out there, you're not paying a retainer. You're just paying kind of an as needed. I know that when we're doing some of our SIU unit training, when we do interviewing training and documentation, we actually do a little bit of a block on how to do an interview when you've got a translator involved, because people tend to get a little hung up in, okay, ask them this. Okay, can you say this? And the object is to pretend that the translator isn't even there in the room. Very hard to get used to doing that. But if you've done it enough times, you kind of, you know, get to a place where you just do the interview and the translator is just there and you kind of ignore it. But having that ability to do that link analysis. And I think, you know, this case, what makes this case interesting is there are so many tentacles. You've got the pharmacy, you've got the doctor. There's likely an adult social daycare in this mix, because that's just kind of a pattern that we see on a lot of these cases. And so you're seeing this trifecta. And so the question really ultimately what's the common connection between all of them? And there's going to be a common connection. And that common connection is going to be the patient to the provider, the doctor to the pharmacy to the adult daycare, and then likely even the prescriptions that they're getting. You know, how is it that all of these people are getting the same medication or two or three or whatever it is? And so, Matt, from this SIU perspective, this is where, you know, we say it all the time. I, like a lot of other people, suffer from shiny object syndrome, which means that I'm a visual person. I want to see things. You know, looking at spreadsheets is great. You have to be able to be conversant in looking at data in that form. But from the visualization perspective, It helps to create a good story. You're putting together a slide deck, you're putting a presentation together, you're making a pitch, but the ability to take your data and visualize it. So to capitalize on really what Wade is talking about regarding something like Analyst Notebook or one of the other tools that are out there, right? Power BI or some of the other tools that are out there where you take your data and you make it look good. And whether making it look good is through something like Analyst Notebook, geofencing, geospacing, looking at a map, where are the concentrations? Those are all tools that are readily available now and allow you with Google, like Google Maps, for example, you can input a whole bunch of information with Google Maps and have it spit out a graphic depiction of things. Those are things that make an SIU investigator's selling of a case to whomever a lot easier, but it also, from an investigative perspective, it gives you that aha moment.
Right. This case went on for 7 years. These kickbacks and that. So the data, you know, is probably going to show patterns of X number of doctors ordering prescriptions for their set of patients, all going to the same pharmacy, or said it had a couple of different franchisees. But the visualization of that, picture it on a, you know, an I2 chart or even on a geospatial geomapping, where you've got the doctor's office, you've got his patients, and it shows them all going to this one pharmacy, and maybe, you know, and no other doctors are referring to that pharmacy. So it's just clumping of patients, you know, that's going to show you a roadmap to how to investigate this case. It's going to be, okay, I've got to talk to this prescribing physician. Why are you sending all of your patients to this pharmacy? What, talk to the patients. Why are you going to this pharmacy when, you know, some of the spatial map, you know, mapping could be there are seven other pharmacies between this patient's house and the one that they're going to. Why are you skipping all of those to go to this one? You right. use that type of information to inform your investigation and to allow you to ask the right questions when you are interviewing these people. And that's how you get to the, oh, well, they're paying me $500 or whatever it might be. They gave me, I guess coupons or something for shopping.
Gift cards, right? That's, yeah. So the gift cards are the flavor of the week for paying whoever you're paying, because they're difficult to trace. It's the burner phone version of money. But Matt, you bring up, you know, the point of this is that, so from an SIU perspective, while you may not also be the PBM, the pharmacy benefit manager, and have that agreement, as the SIU, you could go to your PBM and get a copy of that network agreement. The other thing too is through normal courses of investigative work online, you can identify, is this a specialty pharmacy or is this just a run-of-the-mill mom-and-pop pharmacy? Why is there such a heavy concentration of people going to this pharmacy? You could run the data on that pharmacy for your plan and see, why is it that this pharmacy has such a huge concentration of our members in this zip code? There are some things that are just not going to, that are just not going to look right. The number one thing is going to be a particular doctor having a very high concentration of patients that all go to the same pharmacy for maybe similar medications. Because at the end, when you look at all this data, when you get to the end of your time period of the data that you're looking at, you're probably going to see that it's the same prescriptions or similar prescriptions, because if these are medically unnecessary, the doctor's not going to be prescribing a wide array of prescriptions. They're going to be doing right. whatever it may be. You know, they're not going to be doing a variety of prescriptions that people might actually take that could actually harm them. So they're going to be, you know, maybe on the more innocuous level, but certainly looking, you know, if it's not a specialty pharmacy, if it's not an orphan drug where only a limited number of pharmacies are going to be carrying it, and it's really more run-of-the-mill type stuff, the question then becomes, why are all these people going to this pharmacy? And what is it that's so special about this pharmacy that's getting, all of this traction? So, The data is going to help you with that.
The data is going to help with that. The, you know, the visualization of that data will really help with that. Let's say some of these patients go to see other doctors, some specialists. They get prescriptions from those doctors, and they go to a different pharmacy.
Right. Yeah.
Then you've got another avenue of questions to ask them. Why did you go to this one for this one? And these, you know, what's going on? Why do you make those choices?
And we know, you know, of all the data analytics that are out there, the ones that we know that are some of the more common ones that are done, we do them all the time, are the common beneficiary or common member reports, where, you know, you're going to see that concentration. The other thing is going to be your general kind of payment integrity utilization reports. Where are your upticks? How is it that a pharmacy is getting, in the course of a week, a month, they're getting so many prescriptions from one doctor or two doctors or three doctors, whatever that number is, where there isn't kind of that diversity of prescriptions going to a variety of places. Are the pharmacy, is the pharmacy in question, is it close to where the doctors are? And is it close to where the patients live? Because typically, particularly in these communities where people don't really go beyond their neighborhood, in cultural communities, we see it all the time. In New York City, in Chinatown, downtown Manhattan, you have people that have lived there for years. They do not speak any English. They have no need to speak English. Everything that they need in their community is catering to their cultural needs. We see this a lot. You know, when I was working at OIG in New York, in the Bronx, in the South Bronx, very heavy Hispanic population. A lot of people in those communities don't speak a lick of English because they don't have to. They're in the community where everything that they need, all of the services they need for life, are within those cultural communities. Brighton Beach, Russian speaking. We, you know, it's not uncommon. And so the question becomes, is the pharmacy located in a close approximation to where the people live, to where the doctors are? You're also talking about a Medicare population. A lot of these people are not driving. They're living, for example, in Queens. There's not a lot of parking available. These people are not necessarily getting on buses. They're not getting necessarily in on the subway, right? So are we talking about a pharmacy that's 20 blocks away from where the patient lives, and 10 blocks away from the doctor? You know, are you going 20 blocks away for your routine prescription? So these are all little vignettes that, when you add them up, become things. And that's where you've got to talk to your data analytics team about creating this geofencing or geolocating and say, hey, look, if we're seeing a concentration of 5 or 10% of prescriptions coming from outside of the geo spacing of the doctor, maybe that's something that we want to flag. Is it 10%? Is it 5%? I don't know what the right number is, but something that says, hey, this isn't looking right. You look at a, maybe a month or 3 months worth of data and say, hey, there's a huge concentration of patients that are all coming from Dr. Jones going to this pharmacy. Well, all this concentration, what else do those people have in common? They can't, all of them may be going to Dr. Jones. What else do they have in common? Oh, they all go to this adult daycare. Oh, they're all going to this pharmacy. Start to put these pieces of the puzzle together. And now you've got yourself some things that say, hey, I need to look at this a little bit more. By the time it gets to you, you could have 6 or 8 action items kind of in your drawer. So cases like this become interesting because you don't know the backstory, but you can piece together things that you would say from an SIU perspective become investigational pieces of the puzzle. And just to close this out, as we run out of time, is Wade, your point, like having translation services are, it's really, you can't try to put the square peg in the round hole with someone whose English isn't very good, or, you know, if you speak a little bit of another language, you know, do you speak it well enough to deal with the nuances of the you know, of the vernacular. And so having a translation service that you can just call and have them be on that line and do that is going to save you an inordinate amount of time. And then on top of that is just having those visual depictions. The visual depictions will serve you very well in the long run if you have to make a referral to law enforcement, regulatory, or even internally, if you have to refer the have a discussion with internal management and leadership, you've got some stuff already there for slides. So it's important to understand what your data tools are and how those data tools can become visual depictions of what you need to do. So good stuff. Interesting case, you know, $24.5 million, nothing to sneeze at. It was a 7-year period of time, but a lot of money probably exchanged. So good stuff. As always, we appreciate everybody spending their time with us. We appreciate everybody joining us on our LinkedIn Lives weekly podcast. Get that newsletter to your inbox every Friday. Come see us at advisehealth.com. Sign right up. Catch us on YouTube. Catch us on Spotify. And thanks again for joining us. And we'll see you on the next OIG Roundtable. Take care, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you all.